Hey, we're back. We're back. And now I get to introduce the leader who knows that he has to stop at 8:25 or he'll get the boot. Anyway, here he is. Take her away, leader.
Hey, I'm Paul S. Grateful member of Al-Anon. And I'd like to thank Johnny B for asking me to share. It's a big honor to share in an Al-Anon meeting. I have to be quite honest. I've never done a 45-minute talk, which I was told I was going to do. I've always done 10 to 15-minute shares in Al-Anon. But I'm just going to tell my story, basically. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I grew up the third of three boys of my mother's kids, and both my older brothers were alcoholics and addicts, and they were much older than me growing up. One was 13 years older, and the other one was 15 years older. So all my earliest memories, because they were both practicing alcoholics, were drinking and using and everything that goes along with that, which is a lot of chaos. And that's what I remember growing up. Like, my earliest memories were of like vicious fights, like physical fights. It's like when people drank and used in my household, it wasn't like, oh, it's kumbaya and let's go save the world and peace on earth and John Lennon stuff and all that. It was violent, you know? And so I remember growing up in that environment and just having a lot of fear, even as a kid. Like, I was in a lot of fear because I witnessed like my caretakers basically obliterated, you know, with drugs and alcohol. And alcohol was a really big one for me, you know, growing up. And I remember also my dad was an alcoholic too, and he had left when I was three, but I would go see him on the weekends. And I remember my earliest memories of my dad were him, you know, drinking and driving and stuff like that. And but this just seemed normal because I was a kid. I had no idea. I thought everybody lived with chaos and craziness and violence. But like, he would drive drunk, and I lived in Michigan. So he would basically, I remember one time he would like flip the car into the ditch and everything. And you know, I was pretty durable. I was maybe four or five, and he got out of the car. It was really snowy. And he said, hey, if I fall, just keep going to the house, you know, just keep going. If I fall, just go and call 911, you know? And I was terrified. And then, all my grandparents like drank too. So it's like a generational thing. I had no idea that it was a family disease. You know, I just thought everybody drank and that was normal. But I remember, you know, being at my maternal grandparents and like my grandma getting upset at my grandpa for drinking. And he would, you know, then he would get upset and say, well, you know, your dad drank. He was a sneak drunk. He would drink in the barn, you know, because my grandma was from the South and stuff like that. So there was like different levels of like, I guess if you were just out in the open, drunk in a, you know, violent, that was cool. But if you were a sneak drunk, then it was less appealing or something like that. But it's funny, you know, it's just like, because usually when you do these talks, it's more like on the solution, but 45 minutes, you know, you kind of have to dig into it. So just going back into my childhood, I was an adult child of an alcoholic. You know, I'm realizing that now. But what was so amazing about it is that my parents were both ACAs too. And I had absolutely no compassion for them because I had no idea that this was a generational disease. I had no knowledge of it. It was just, to me, these people are causing me a lot. And basically, I'm scared of my siblings. And when my brother drinks, like he would get real violent, you know, like he would come home, like beaten up, like his face smashed, And like, and I witnessed my uncle like completely, like they were both drinking and then some altercation happened. And he like, my uncle like completely destroyed my brother right in front of me. And I had no idea that this wasn't normal. Like I didn't know. And then my mom was an untreated Al-Anon. So she would just let this violence and chaos go on, you know? And, I had a lot of resentment about this stuff for a long time. And, I think my first, you know, I guess how I would check out is just fantasy. You know, I would like, I couldn't live in that, world. So even as a kid, I would always come up with these scenarios, you know, and I had a pretty dark mind even going way back then. And even though I wasn't drinking or using, I still had a hostile thought life. And I think that's how the Al-Anon affected me. I remember, for an example, like my first fantasy at like 4 years old was to kill my whole family, you know? And I remember like this wasn't really normal thinking. You know, in retrospect, thank God I didn't do it because, you know, you hear all these horror stories now, but it was just a thought. But I really didn't think that they did a good job parenting, you know, and so basically that happened. And then my dad, fortunately, he got sober. He kind of white knuckled it. And then he ended up going to food. So he ended up dying of diabetes, but he stopped drinking, fortunately, which was good because all his brothers died of alcoholism. So I guess the long and the short of it is I qualify for Al-Anon. And as I remember hanging out with my uncles, and they basically, none of them worked. Like, and that was almost like bragging about, you know, who dropped out of school the soonest. Like my one uncle, he stopped school in third grade. So I guess he was the coolest growing up in that, that mindset. But, yeah. And then they all died. Like that uncle Carl, he like died on the toilet, like drinking. And then my other uncle, Keith, he used to slam two fists of vodka and then chase it with a 2 liter of water. I remember witnessing that. Like he walked in front of a car. So it's like, I had no idea that this family disease of alcoholism, how much it affected my life until I was asked to share in this meeting, because they're not the most pleasant memories, you know what I mean? And it's like looking back on this stuff and, you know, trying to fill in time because it's easy. Oh, let's talk about gratitude today. You know, like if you're doing 2 minutes, that's awesome. But like looking at the family disease of alcoholism is very devastating for me. And I don't really take this disease lightly at all. But I'm grateful for Al-Anon. But to make a long story short, that's kind of how it was growing up. And I remember my brother, when I was maybe 15, my oldest brother, he had gone into a treatment center in Arizona. So I remember going out there for family week, and that was my first introduction to Al-Anon. So around 15 is when I was first introduced to Al-Anon, and they gave us those daily readers, the One Day at a Time in Al-Anon and Courage to Change and all that. But it didn't stick with me because I was like, well, I'm not drinking I partook in that a little bit, but I hadn't really got deep into that aspect of it. So I just didn't really see how Al-Anon would help me. But I remember being in those family meetings, and I remember nobody took recovery seriously in my family too. It's like they were even talking about like being sober was like not doing heroin, like that was sober, but you could still like drink and smoke crack and do other outside issues. So it was like, that was kind of how it was. And I really didn't have any faith in the whole recovery system, but I was just introduced to it through a treatment center. Like I had no idea that there was actually meetings where you would go willingly. You know, I thought, well, instead of going to jail, you go to treatment, you know, like that was my only idea of treatment at that time. So I suffered from being an adult child of an alcoholic, an Al-Anon, I guess you would call it, because there's a whole branch of that in the Al-Anon program, the ACAs. So that's how I started out. And but then I found, I kind of took a little detour myself and partook in what I hated. I became one of the people that I hated. And I did that for a long time. And I think that treated my Al-Anonism. I don't want to go into huge details about it, but basically from like 14 to 27, I did what I witnessed growing up, and I had a huge bottom in that. And then I ended up being relieved from that whole thing. And then in around in 05, somebody had suggested that I come to Al-Anon, and they basically told me if I didn't deal with these core issues, that I was basically going to end up like my uncles or end up like my brothers and stuff like that. And it got my attention because it was actually somebody in the recovery who was actually recovered, you know, who actually had long-term recovery in both programs, the AA and Al-Anon. So I started going to Al-Anon just because I was still affected by my brothers and I was still affected by growing up with that. But I would only go, I started in 05, I would only go to one meeting a year, whether I needed to or not. You know, that's how I started my Al-Anon journey. And this was when I really knew I needed it, because I was really affected by the, now I was getting older, and but I was still bothered by my brothers. Like my brothers were still using and threatening me and like really affecting me. And I had no tools to detach, and I had no tools to basically, they would say detach with love. Well, I couldn't detach at all. And that was one of the big things that Al-Anon taught me, is how to detach. But going to one meeting a year wasn't doing it. So I did that from like 05 to 2016. I would just come to a meeting a year, and my sponsor would say I would use it kind of like the emergency room. Like I would come in, like do a step one, a pretty thorough step one, but then I wouldn't really get into the step work. But to make a long story short, in 2016, I was done, you know, like I was tired of living with all this fear and living with all these resentments from basically that started from my childhood, but still dealing with these same people. Basically my qualifier when I first came in was my brother. And this last time when I came in, he had told me that I should go kill myself. And he was like a father figure to me, and it really affected me, you know? And it was like, I couldn't detach. Like I, so much of growing up in alcoholism was so much of my self-esteem was based on if my qualifier is approved of me or not. So it was like, that was revolutionary to me when they taught me about like detachment. And one of my favorite pages is on January 7th of One Day at a Time in Al-Anon. I refer to it a lot. It says that someone says something unkind about me. Are my feelings hurt? Yes. Should they be? No. How do I overcome my hurt? By detaching myself, turning it off until I can figure out what lies behind it. If it was retaliation for an unkindness I did, let me correct my fault. If not, I have no responsibility in the matter. Should I ignore or challenge? No, I will let it go. Least said, soonest mended. Nothing can hurt me unless I allow it to. See, this is something that was revolutionary to me, that nothing can hurt me unless I allow it to, because I was constantly being hurt by stuff outside of me. So when I read this, it gave me a lot of hope. It's like, I didn't know how to apply it, but just reading these words, like doing these daily readers, it really gave me a lot of hope. And that's one of the main things that my current sponsor has me do. He has me read this One Day at a Time in Al-Anon every day. And it says, when I am pained by anything that happens outside of myself, it is not that thing which hurts me, but the way I think and feel about it. See, it's all about my attitude. And I had no idea that coming into Al-Anon, I was going to learn how to change my attitude by developing this relationship with a higher power. Like, I didn't realize that the only way that I can learn how to detach is me getting my self-esteem from something greater than me. And it goes on to have, says a whole bunch of other great stuff in here. It says, today's reminder, let me not take to myself and suffer over the actions and reactions of other people. See, that's one thing when I was growing up, when alcoholism, of course, I'm going to be affected by my caretakers if they're drinking and there's violence and stuff. But I'm grown, as you see, I'm way past, you know, middle age. So it's like, why am I still living like an adult child of an alcoholic? Like when my brother says something to me, and I remember talking to my sponsor and he was like, well, you're a pretty big guy. What are you worried about? He's telling you to kill yourself. He's like, you go there, because I was going back to Michigan because my dad was dying and I wanted to go back there. My other brother was on a bender and he was blaming me for him picking up, and he had some OD, and somehow it was my fault, even though I was in another state. So he was leaving all these vicious messages about how I should kill myself because he tried to kill himself unsuccessfully. But then I'm telling my sponsor about this, and he reminds me that I'm not this little kid anymore. Like, because I'll go right back to me being this like 4-year-old, because my older brother was much older than me, and I still look at him as this paternal figure. But the bottom line is, this guy weighs maybe 100 pounds now because he's been an active addict this whole time, still on pills and everything. And worse comes to worse, I might have to lay a thump on them. I mean, I know this is a mixed meeting, but I would have to protect myself or call the police or whatever it is. You know, I'm not, you know, advocating violence, but I'm just saying it's not like a situation where I would need to be as worried as I was. Like, I was in so much fear. It was like almost going back to where I felt so powerless as a kid and all that fear. But to make a long story short, yeah, other adult human beings are not my responsibility, no matter how closely their lives may be intertwined with mine. I will not allow myself to be troubled by anyone else. My one problem is to improve my own way of living and looking at life. See, this is all about attitude and improving my way of life. And how I had to do that is I really had to start taking Al-Anon seriously. Back when I came in here in 2016, I came in here like a dying man seizing a life preserver this last time. And then I was willing to ask somebody to actually take me through the steps. And that was the big piece for me, the turning point, because I had done a lot of first steps, like I had said, but I had never done any step work, any inventory, really any step work beyond step one. And then basically all I got out of it in the beginning was, oh yeah, it's all their fault and I'm fine, you know? And then I would just go back to doing the same old behavior. But this time, what I really heard is I don't put the focus on the alcoholic or the outside thing. The focus has to be completely on me. So then I started going through these steps pretty seriously. And I remember in the beginning, I had to really look at step one, and I went through that path to recovery. You know, there's all those questions, and I had to go through and answer those questions. And my sponsor said, if you're real serious, you'll at least do a question a day. So I started actually writing all that stuff out. And this was a while ago, this was back in 2016, but I just slowly started going through the step work. And, but I had in the beginning, I really saw how I developed all these character defects too, that it wasn't just the alcoholic to blame. Like, I had developed certain character traits like dishonesty, fear, resentment, you know, selfishness. Like, I basically had all the same character traits as these alcoholics that I really disliked, but I wasn't drinking or using. So who's insane? It's like, here I am doing all the same behavior, stone cold sober, I'm being dishonest. Like, I'm trying to manipulate situations to suit me. And I'm trying to relieve my guilt by trying to convince my brother not to kill himself. That was like my main thing for years and years and years. And I remember finally, I started hearing about that so much about he's an OD or he's going to take his life. At some point, I just got kind of jaded. And I was just like, man, I'll fly out there and help you with this, you know? So it's just like, I'm tired of hearing about this crap about being held hostage by these alcoholics who want to guilt trip me that you're going to take your life. My life, I have to learn how to live myself. And growing up in generations of alcoholism, I already felt like I was kind of at a little bit of a disadvantage, where I had to really come into Al-Anon and learn like basic stuff, like making daily gratitude lists and, you know, doing affirmations and doing stuff that people who are positive, like my sponsor in my life, who had their lives together, were teaching me how to do. So it was a slow journey for me. That's what I like about Al-Anon too. It's like you take what you like and you leave the rest. There wasn't like any rush into doing the steps. And I've come through other programs where it's more like there's time frames. My sponsor, he didn't care if I did the steps or not, you know, because he was actually working his program where I'm outside of him. You know what I mean? So it's like, that was what I liked about Al-Anon. It was do it at your own pace, and my recovery is my responsibility. And that's what I really learned from this program. And then I did my first three steps through that path to recovery. And I just remember it would talk about, you know, in step two, what is a power greater than me? And for me, it's just peace of mind. It's just the soundness of mind. And they would talk about, how do you connect with that power? To me, it's through prayer and meditation, you know? So I remember just writing this stuff down and just kind of learning what works for me, like what coping skills work for me, what self-care works for me. It's like, what's the next right thing that I can do? My sponsor would say, what's the most loving thing that I can do? Like, that would never occur to a guy like me who had this hostile, negative thought life. I was just so angry when I got here. And I related to that birthday share who talked about, he doesn't need a miracle. Or no, you're not supposed to cross talk. I'm sorry. But I relate to just, I don't need, the miracle is that I'm alive still. And I survived this family disease of alcoholism, because a lot of people don't survive it, at least with my genetics. It's like, this is a life and death errand that I'm on. So it's like, if I need to speak for more than 10 minutes or 15 minutes, one, I'll probably never be asked to speak again in Al-Anon. And I'm okay with that, because it doesn't really matter to me, because I'm just grateful that I was given these tools. Particularly, you know, I went through, you know, the first three steps through paths to recovery, and then they switched it up on me. And then I had to switch over to that blueprint for progress. And that really hit me, like taking the inventory on those different, I remember the thing about love, like I pretty much, that just made my brain just shut down. Like I had to really dig deep to go through that inventory process. And then at that point, my sponsor had basically we just kind of lost touch. And I was in the middle of that blueprint for progress. And then I got my current sponsor, this guy, Ken. And he said, just to be honest today, and he's not on this call, thankfully, but he wanted me to do more of a traditional resentment inventory, my sex conduct, and then also my fear. So I went through, I guess, more the big book of AA inventory, but he was an Al-Anon member, but that's how he had me do it. But he was very critical about my role. And then the thing that was different is he had me like look at also my assets. He wanted me to start focusing on my assets and stuff. And that was the other thing. Like I had been through 12 steps before, like a chore, but I had never really focused on assets. I was always just beating myself up, you know, and looking at what's wrong all the time. And my sponsor, he's always focused on what am I doing right, you know, and trying to build that, build more positive thinking and more positive actions and stuff. And that's what I really need. That's the daily application stuff that I need. So I remember going through that inventory with him, and it was really eye-opening, and just seeing different areas that I struggled with, like how much abandonment had played into my how I interacted in the world. And that really probably played into why my relationships have always been historically, they didn't end well, you know? And I think because I had a lot of trust issues, I remember trust was a big thing. And I had to really, you know, really look and see like, how was this affecting my life today? You know, and he would always talk about not abandoning myself. You know, that was his big thing, you know, don't abandon myself because I'll quit doing the things that I need to do. I'll quit my self-care. I'll quit doing the daily stuff that I need to do to actually be a member of society. See, for me, that's the other thing that Alan had taught me. It taught me detachment, but the other big piece was self-care. I had to learn how to start taking care of myself and putting a value on myself. And a lot of the meetings I went to, they would talk about self-care, like basically trying to eat well, you know, eat balanced. And I struggle with that too. I struggle with my weight. My weight goes up and down. I've been eating healthier now. Like I qualify pretty much for everything with an A after it. I qualify for it. But my core stuff is Al-Anon. It all stems from, I believe, growing up in that chaos. And then I'm also like what they call, I heard these in some of the Al-Anon meetings, they're talking about these chaos seekers, you know, like looking for that rush, that hit in the chaos. So it's like, I need to really know who I am. And that inventory process really gave me a lot of insight on what areas I need to focus on, like my abandonment, my trust issues and all that. And then I went into 6 and 7 and I was really seeing that I can't do this on my own, that I really need this power. And it even tells me that in the book, it basically says, you know, in step 6, that I was entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. See, I'm not doing any of this stuff on my own. See, all I can do is bring the character I brought here if I don't have this power. And then it talks a lot about in step 6 about some of these defects. I don't want to let them go because they're like an old pair of shoes. I'm used to them. You know, it tells me that a new pair of shoes takes time to break in. Likewise, the new self I am striving for may have pinched while I was adjusting to it, but I was the only one who could bring about the changes that could mean a new way of life for myself. See, I want a new way of life for myself. See, I want to put a value on myself. This is step 6 in Al-Anon. See, I'm not making this stuff up. This is a way of life, you know, but I need to see that I built this character and that I'm comfortable with this character. See, I can blame parents all I want, and I do that great. I can blame my dad. My dad's dead, but I'll still blame him. What good is that going to do me? So to make a long story short, I had to see that there was a payoff in me being the victim. That was the other thing. I said, I want to be a victim. I grew up in alcoholism, so that gives me a right to lie, cheat, and steal, and to do what I think is going to put me ahead, because if you had my childhood, then you have the right to do this too. See? And all these way of thinking really put me, you know, it really put me at odds with people in society, see, because that's not the type of character that people want to interact with. So I had to really see that my Al-Anonism was causing me some antisocial behaviors, and I couldn't blame other people. So I went through step 6 after I did that inventory, and I really saw that I needed this God. And I had built that power through the earlier steps, through steps 2 and 3 in particular, where I start building this relationship with a power other than me. I call it God. You can call it whatever you want. But a lot of this program, see, I forget that this is a spiritual program. See, I'll think I'm going to come in here and I'm going to learn something. I'm going to hear something in a meeting and then I'm going to go behave better. But I can't behave any better. I built this character and that character is built. And it took me years and years to see that the best I could do is the best I could do, and that I needed to start leaning into this power. And I had to see that these old character traits, like manipulating or trying to get people to do things my way, weren't working anymore, because I have no right even to try to convince somebody to stop drinking. It talked about that in step 1, that I don't even have the right to do that. I was reading that earlier. My schemes and threats succeeded only in causing me physical and emotional exhaustion. This isn't step one. See, but this is what I'm always trying to do. I'm always trying to come up with a scheme or a threat to get my way. I'm trying to come up with a scheme or a threat to get my brother to not blame me for his OD. So I'm going to be really, you know, really kind and considerate and nice. I'm going to wear the character. I'm going to be the character. See, I'm sober. I'm at an advantage. I can really put on a face and be this character that's really considerate and kind and loving. But all I want is his approval. You know, I need to see that. I need to see what my motives are. See, I can lie to everybody, but I can't lie to myself. See, that's the thing. And that's what Al-Anon really taught me is you can't lie to these guys in here because they really don't care. You know, a lot of these black belt Al-Anon guys, my home group's the Brentwood men's stag. I like these men's meetings. This one is different because there's a lot of people on here, but the other one's only like 20 people. That's my home meeting. But I like the men's meetings because I can really expose who I really am and see that I have a lot of growing up to do. But anyway, I went through these steps, and what was amazing when I got to step 9, that father that I was telling you about, he happened to be, he was dying of his diabetes. And it happened to be right when I was doing my 9th step. A huge gift of the program is I was actually able to go and sit with him while he passed away, you know, because I was able at that point to separate the disease from the person. See, that was the other thing that Al-Anon taught me, that alcoholism is a disease. It would be like me being upset if somebody had cancer. See, the alcoholics in my life, and it's a generational disease. I was on a meeting yesterday. Somebody talked about it was 7 generations. I know of at least 4 generations of people in my family who died of alcoholism. So how am I gonna be resentful or hurt by somebody who dies from a disease? So I was actually able to get some detachment and actually look at the good stuff my dad did for me, because I'll go through these resentments too. Like my biggest resentment was my father, because he left me as an infant. That was what I put down. But then I went through the process, and then I started looking at, you know, they do this extended third column, like where's my dishonesty? My dishonesty and that resentment is that my dad came and picked me up every weekend. It was actually, once he got sober, he was actually a good dad, and he was actually there for me, and he helped me quite a bit, and I actually lived with him for years at a time. He helped me get into college and helped me get jobs and stuff earlier in my life. But I dismissed all this stuff because I want to play that victim. I want to be abandoned. You know, I want to be the orphan. You know, that's a good character to play, because you get, you know, it's not a good character, but you know, that's just where my mind goes with it. And I believe these lies. You know, what are the lies I'm telling myself? So I had to really see this stuff. Luckily I've had good sponsorship where they've guided me through this step work. Particularly, there's a lot of relief in step 4 and 5 and 8 and 9 for me. But all the steps are great. And I was able to show up there and be with my dad when he was dying. And I was the last person there with him, and I was able to hold his hand and be there with him when he passed away. And that's amazing, because I hated that guy. I wanted to kill him growing up. And the only thing that it's different in both my other brothers, they couldn't be there. One was still getting loaded. He was too busy shooting heroin. And then the other one, he was still suffering from the effects of his OD. If you take 400 pills, you might have an adverse reaction, you know, but that's the thing. It's like, I need to see what this disease does. And also, if I stay in recovery, that I can actually show up despite being affected by this. And that's the big gift. And I don't know if I'm grateful that I grew up in a family of alcoholics, but I'm grateful for the Al-Anon family group, because the literature, for example, is just amazing. You know, all of it is. Even they have all that ACA book, which is, they say, Don't Read Alone, Survival to Recovery. That's a great book. And then there's obviously the Al-Anon 12 and 12. The One Day at a Time in Al-Anon. There's always all this great, these resources. And that was one of the things, is they say one of the suggestions is daily reading of Al-Anon literature. And I really try to do that. I really don't try to make up my own program. I try to do what my sponsor suggests. And then the other thing I do is I really like to write down what I'm powerless over, what I'm grateful for, what I like about myself, and what I did well that day. And I learned that in an Al-Anon meeting. So there's so many tools that I had learned, but the other thing that it enabled me to do is I was able to be there for my mom when she had like multiple strokes and stuff. And I was the type of guy, I couldn't show up even if I was in the same state. But I remember I was in my home group, one of my other home groups, this Sunday ACA meeting. And they taught me there, the women there too, they taught me how to show up and show up and be detached. So I was able to show up there and be there with my mom and actually interact with my brother. And that was the other thing too. It's like, I was even the brother that, you know, told me to kill myself back in 2016. I even have a relationship with him now because of Al-Anon. Like I'm able to view him as a sick person and not take stuff personally, because for somebody to try to kill themselves like that, they must not be doing very well. So, and then what Al-Anon's done for me, just in general, I'm able to hold jobs now. I'm able to, you know, be in relationships, have friendships, actually, you know, feel my feelings in real time. That was the other thing too. It's like, I didn't even know what a feeling was before I came into Al-Anon, but, you know, going through this work and really getting honest with a sponsor. I mean, sponsorship is really critical, and taking commitments too. That was the other thing too. I remember taking commitments and I got the treasury commitment. And that was really good. And then that broke my streak of going to one Al-Anon meeting a year, whether I needed to or not, because people wanted to know what was going on with their money. So I took my first commitment was treasury, because nobody wanted this commitment. And I knew I needed it. This was back in 2016. So I started getting involved in service. And that ended up becoming a secretary. And that was great too, because then it forced me to go to other meetings to start getting speakers and stuff. So, and now I'm doing intergroup, which is another great thing. And I don't know, I've just been very fortunate. I'm not feeling very creative. I mean, talking about Al-Anon and growing up with the effects of alcohol it's pretty daunting, you know, but it's what I had, you know, it was the cards that I was dealt, but I wouldn't change it, because I feel like that gave me the opportunity to be on the spiritual path. And I think that's the main thing that Al-Anon is a spiritual program. I mean, even the stuff that we read in here, it's all about this God. And if you read the early literature, like they have stuff from the, you know, Bible and stuff like that. I mean, I think now the more current literature is a little less like that. But if you read One Day at a Time in Al-Anon, there's a lot of biblical quotes. And my mind was closed to all that. I hated all that stuff. I hated church and all those people. But when I felt like my life was on the line, I was more open-minded. See, if you feel like you're dying, you're more open-minded to try something different. And that's been my experience. And I don't know. I haven't talked for 45 minutes. I'm almost at 40. I mean, what's going on today? This year has been an interesting year. I've been fortunate and that I haven't lost my job, and I haven't, I've been able to dig deeper into my program. I'm getting ready to start working the traditions with my sponsor. That was the other thing too. It's like, I had never finished the steps. I've had three sponsors in Al-Anon and I had never finished a step. I'd done only step one with the first one. I had only gotten to step four with the second one. This last one, I made a commitment to actually get through the steps, because that's one of my big defects is I'm always quitting. I'm always quitting before the miracle or whatever, if you don't like the miracle, but I was always quitting before the process, before finishing the 12 steps. This time I actually finished the steps. I know I'm not finished. I still have to keep working the principles, but I officially finished them with my sponsor, and I'm getting ready to start working on the traditions. And I've never done that. You know, I've never worked on the traditions. And he basically wants me to study the traditions and then see how I can apply it in my relationships. You know, like our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. I mean, that's a great tradition, you know, and I need to start with it. That's where I'm at in the work right now. And I, to tell you the truth, I've been balking on it a little bit. I've been congratulating myself so much for finishing the steps, because sometimes I go into meetings and I'll hear people share and they've never done the steps and stuff like that. So it's like, there's a part of me that wants to always sell myself short. Well, I've already worked the steps. Why would I work the traditions? Well, why not? Because there's another 12 principles or more there that I could maybe apply to my life. So I'm going to start up, you know, looking into that. And I hear people that use traditions and the relationships make the relationship better, you know, because I'm a what about me guy, you know, but it's about unity and it's about the group has to come first and the relationship as a whole has to be number one, not just me being selfish. So if I can even apply that into my work life, how much better would my work life be if I was looking at how can I be part of a greater whole than just what can I get out of work? Because that, I think that's big, one of my defects is just always my self-centeredness, me trying to just please self at all costs. You know, I don't know if you have this, but I picked up a lot of those same traits as the alcoholics, but I wasn't using beverage alcohol to treat it. So I was using other stuff to treat it. Now I'm trying to use the principles of the program. Like in my daily practice, I meditate at least 20 minutes a day. I have to really get close to this power because otherwise I'm just in self-will. And when I'm in self-will, I'm going to cause damage just by being awake. You know, that's been my experience. So I have to reset every day and do my prayers, do my daily readers, particularly the one day at a time in Al-Anon. I love the courage to change too, but the one that I really don't miss is the one day at a time in Al-Anon. And because that's the one my sponsor suggests. And, but I never remember what I was talking about, you know. Yeah, awareness of others is about today. It's like, and I try to practice that when I went to work to start thinking about other people, to have awareness of others and to live with concern, love, and kindness. See, that's not my natural state. See, I have to read these books and try to apply them. How can I be concerned for others at work, be loving at work and kind at work? How can I do that in my personal relationships? And it's just stuff that would never occur to me because I wake up and it's like, oh God, another day. But when I get into action and I get into the daily readers, then I'm actually excited about what can I bring to the day. And it's a big shift for a guy like me. And I think I'm out of speed, but I know it's a big honor to share at this meeting. I really like this meeting. I've been here before. I like sharing for 3 minutes. You know, I like just being a participant, but doing a long talk, what this really taught me is how far I've come, you know, because nobody survived the disease of alcoholism. Well, they survived, but they're still using, they're killing themselves with drugs and alcohol still. But I need to be grateful that I've actually broken the cycle. Like, I don't need to pass this on to more generations, you know? Because when I heard it last night, I was in a meeting, they said 7 generations. That really hit me. And then I know at least 4 generations of my family, because my brother's kids are already drinking and using. One of them's already homeless at like as a teenager. This is no joke. And I know for me, if I don't treat this on a daily basis, that could be me too. And the only thing that I have going for me is this power and coming to these meetings and trying to be honest. And the step work, trying to be really honest in that step work and making my amends. Like, am I amends this last time? Like, the last one I had to make was to my brother, and I bullied him, my younger brother, my half brother, because I had tormented him because I saw him as the kid that took my father away, basically. And then there was all this animosity between the two families. That was another, you know, little piece of the whole Al-Anon family disease. So I tortured this kid growing up and I had to make amends for it to him. That was my big amends. I still have to make amends to my half sister for similar behavior. Like, I was a bully growing up. I had a lot of anger in me. And, but I don't have to live that way anymore. I could be the man that God wants me to be and try to treat his kids with love and kindness and actually try to to be an asset instead of a taker, you know? And that's the kind of stuff that I learned in 12 Steps, and particularly Al-Anon, and from my sponsor. So that's actually 45 minutes. So I'm done. Thank you so much again for allowing me to share. And it's been a great honor. Thank you.